616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. This is Ryan here with Bill.
Who's the CM Punk to his FTR.
Hell yeah, let's go. Repping today.
I saw the shirt. That's why I went that way.
It's Saturday. I'm ready for Collision. but anyways.
Not going to lie, Collision kind of looks like shit tonight.
Yeah, it might be. We'll see. Or it might surprise us. But anyways, this is
Tony
episode 50.
Tony does pull them out that way.
That's true. This is the Big 5-0, episode 50 of the podcast. As you can notice by the fact that we haven't gone off the rails too much already, Dan isn't here. Dan's back to being a working man, so he might
apparently
be hard to get again.
The job that Dan hates is still better than talking about Giant Man with us.
Yeah, Dan bailed on that's our headcanons, that Dan just bailed on us because we were going to give him both Giant Man issues to cover today. So. But yes, we have an interesting lineup of comics today. They're mostly good besides the last two, but you take what you can get, I guess, some weeks. It's going to be better than next week, I suppose.
Next week, I think, is going to be rough. But the good news is I think that's the last time we ever have to talk about Solo Torch.
Yeah, at least until the early 2000s. But
I haven't read that series. That one might be good.
Early to mid, I mean. It's like in 2004, I think.
I know he gets another series, and I mean, technically some of the Marvel team-ups are Torch stories, but
they're
a whole lot better than this solo Torch run.
Oh, yeah. They dipped their toes in, of course. But if you guys missed it, we've started streaming some games since the last time we recorded this podcast a couple weeks ago. We tried to record this last week, but we're having issues with our program we use with Riverside. But it turns out it was a dumb issue that I could have fixed easily if I had figured it out, but we didn't. But we started with a Bioshock stream for our first gaming live stream. Technically,
you may not want to watch that one if you want to maintain any respect for Brian as a gamer.
Well, yeah, I mean, we lost the Arkham Asylum once, so bad start for me for my game rep, but anyways.
The one where you were actually competent, we lost, and then you played that one.
funny how that works, huh? And then Bill and I had Dan around for the Bioshock stream as well, so it was all three of us, and we had a TEW Total Extreme Wrestling 2020 stream with Bill and I last night. For any of the wrestling fans out there, go check that out. That was a fun time. Hopefully next time we'll be able to capture all the windows in the game, but we talked through everything that wasn't able to be captured, so you could still follow along with us enough. And yeah, it was a fun time. So we did using the Here Comes the Money mod, and we are playing a Shane McMahon in WCW in 2000 for legit. For real.
And learning that basically everyone who made any sort of a reputation in WCW has fucking contracts with Time Warner that last... And so we can't hire anyone good.
Yeah, pretty much. We're just hiring whoever we can kind of deal with that. Anybody we can that we want to deal with. That. Sorry, Disco, you're not coming on. But
we're
anyway.
The Harris twins.
Yeah, we're the Harris brothers.
Wear an SS shirt on pay-per-view. Don't get hired by us, even in fiction.
Yeah. So, yeah. Fuck the assholes. But for today's comics, we have quite the lineup. We're going to start off with a couple Surge and Fury issues of issue 16 and 17. Then we're going to do a Fantastic Four issue, which is issue 37. And Amazing Spider-Man 23 after that. Then we'll end it off with a couple Tales to Astonish issues for some Giant Man stories, which is issue 66 and 67A stories. And I just wanted to run through the full titles since it's been a couple weeks. So, first off, we'll jump into it now and get into Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos issue number 16, which is titled A Fortress in the Desert Stands.
Oh, yeah, that is Stands. For some reason, I was reading that as Sands every time I looked at this.
I thought it was Strands in my head for some reason. So, of course, this is written by Stan Lee. We got Dick Ayers on art, thankfully. Frank Giacola is on inks. Jack Kirby and Chick Stone's on the awful cover. Artie Simic is on letters. So Dan would have buried this cover.
You called this an awful cover.
It's not that bad. I just
wanted
to play the role.
I was literally just going to go off about how I think this is the best Sergeant Fury cover we've gotten.
It's actually pretty cool. I was just
playing
the part of Dan.
It's very evocative. Like, I mean, let's be honest, pretty much all the covers of this era are bad. But this one at least is really evocative of what's going on in it.
I mean, it stands out too. It's very different from a lot of the other covers that we see around this time period. And the color palette, like, you don't get like yellow, really yellow covers like this.
Yeah,
a lot.
The whole cover just makes it seem hot.
Yeah, it does capture the themes of the comics, so that is cool. The release date on this one was January 1965, so Happy New Year. And then 20-page story. And we don't have synopsis for the Sergeant Fury issues this week, so we're going to say
fuck
it, we ball.
Try to remember what we read 2 weeks ago.
And we're going to take liberties and call it on the fly. So, the issue, of course, opens up in classic Sergeant Fury fashion with them all kind of training and fucking around a little bit. Quickly, they end up being called over the first attack squad, which is the Howland Commandos, of course. Get called over to base and are told their next mission by Happy Sam Sawyer, which they are sent to Africa. Which I hope you like some stories in Africa, because we're going to be there for both of these two issues. Pretty much their mission is just to blow up the fortress that's the Nazis have occupied in the desert here. That's kind of the deal, right?
Yeah. I think there was a more elaborate reason as to why they had to blow it up. But
they had this weapon. They had this weapon that they created.
A super weapon hidden in the fortress.
That's what it was. They had a super weapon hidden in the fortress, so they're sent to blow the whole fortress up so the weapon can't get out and used by the Nazis so they can't win the war. So that's the gist of the issue here. So it's a lot of... They make their way through the desert, they find the fortress, but they're only 7 men, so at first they're pretty unsuccessful. They're hiding...
Somehow their strategy of frontal assault on a fortress in the Sahara, on foot, doesn't pay off for them.
I know, that's crazy. They're hiding in the dunes. They're hiding in the dunes as a buggy comes around, and they are easily spotted, kind of realistically. So they are.
Yeah, this might actually be one of the most realistic moments in the Howling Commandos that it doesn't just work on sheer audacity.
This whole issue is probably one of the more realistic issues when you.
Except for the depiction of the Arabs that we're coming up on.
Well, that's true.
I don't know much about Bedouin culture, but what I do know makes me think that this is pretty racist and not very accurate.
So the Howlers end up on foot running away from. The buggy, and then also some other Nazi guards who were out doing something with a shovel and end up after them as well. And then we have people shooting at them from the top of the fortress too. So the Howlers are pretty overpowered, but Gabe decides to throw a grenade out, which takes out the buggy. We have then Reb decides to be a dumbass and be a hero and cover them so the rest can run away. Dum Dum went ahead to try and infiltrate by himself for some reason and was trapped by the Nazis, so Reb's running out to save him.
Yeah, that's why Reb was running out. He's not really being a dumbass,
he's
doing normal heroics.
Dum Dum.
But it doesn't work for once, because this book's being somewhat a realistic war comic.
And it doesn't work at all. Reb is injured, and Dum Dum is captured, and Fury grabs the injured Reb, and they run away.
I believe Reb was caught in the explosion from the buggy. I don't think they shot him. I think he got exploded.
Maybe.
Nearby
shell burst, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's hard to say for sure, because this is an era when they're not allowed to draw injuries, so... Everyone's just like, oh my god, he's so badly hurt. Well, he looks completely fine.
Yeah, he's caught by a nearby shell burst is what it is. So the Howlers are traveling across the desert, needing to escape for now until they can recuperate. They're running low on water until they spot a...
An oasis.
An oasis, I was looking for the word. And it's actually
and not
a legit
the British
one.
Band. Dan's not here, so I have to fill in with the bad puns.
And at this oasis, they are, they meet an Arab tribe. Do they give them a name? I don't know. They're just
They do
Arabs.
not.
Okay, they're just
I
an Arab
assume they're
tribe.
supposed to be Bedouin, but they're not identified because they're just whatever racist characters people who are reading this comic have in their mind.
They certainly believe in Allah. And then, I mean, women with that are definitely not traditional Arab women because they're showing a lot of skin. They're
Yeah,
pretty much,
they're Persian women is what they
yeah.
are.
I think they're mixing their races up here is what's
Yeah,
going on,
that's
but.
what I'm saying. They don't know shit about the cultures of the Middle East, and so they just kind of lump together whatever they heard about them into one thing. I mean, for one thing, like Persian Arabs, which these are clearly supposed to be, are not in Northern Africa.
Yeah.
But they don't know anything about the people of Northern Africa, so they went with Persians.
Yeah, so we're losing our accuracy of this issue, but that's okay.
Yes, this is the most racist moment that we've had so far in Sergeant Fury. And I'm
So
counting the next issue, which is also pretty racist.
yeah, they're both pretty bad. So Fury is talking to the leader of the tribe or one of the higher ups and trying to get some help in the situation or whatever, and then Dino kind of flirts the tiniest bit with the woman of the tribe and is then kidnapped and chained to tied down slash
They
chained
chain him to a
a
big fucking
weight
rock in the desert without even telling
in the
Fury that
desert.
they're doing this. They just keep talking to Fury, and a bunch of guys go off and, like, leave Dino to get murdered.
Yeah, and then the Howlers are like, "Wait, where's Dino?" And they end up finding him, and they're like, "Hey, what the fuck, pal? What'd you do?"
And then nothing comes of it.
And nothing
Everyone just
comes of
forgets
it.
about it immediately.
Yeah, and then they're like, "Oh, maybe we should help you guys." I mean, and the one of the girls is like, "Oh, this blondie is pretty hurt," and Reb's
Yeah,
like dying here.
the whole kill Dino thing was clearly just that they found they still had a page to fill when the script was turned in. So they're like, what did they do? Oh, I know. They kill people for looking at their women wrong.
So the Arabs decide to help the Howlers because they feel they're more honorable than the Nazis and or whatever they say in here, and Reb is left
I
but.
think Fury, if I remember correctly, Fury basically convinced them. That one, because they had been helping the Nazis, and Fury basically convinced them that once they finished helping, like once they helped the Nazis defeat the Europeans, the Nazis were just going to turn on them. And of course, because Fury is a persuasive American, they immediately believed him, despite him presenting no evidence. Because
Yeah,
at its core, this is a propaganda comic.
he talks about getting the Croats out of their land at one point here. So Reb is left behind, but the Howlers borrow some camels and some traditional dress wear of the Arab clan here, and they all go back to the fortress, and they're able to sneak in because the Nazis just think they're the Arabs that have been helping them. So yeah, I mean, it's as easy as that, boys and girls. As they make it back in, though, they are just in time as Dum Dum is about to be fucking slaughtered. But thankfully saved, and we see the V2 rockets that are the secret weapon that the Nazis have in the
Yeah, they were
fortress.
just the Stan wasn't at his most creative here. Their secret weapon is just early V2s.
Yeah. So yeah, they're saved here. They just throw the traditional dress wear off like it's nothing in a funny panel. And then they pretty easily escape from here for the most part, really. So, yeah, that's
Yeah,
about
there's just
it.
a whole lot of fighting. The fortress gets exploded.
The fortress does get blown up by Izzy, and then they kind of go back and thank the Arabs for letting them borrow their stuff.
And Reb has somehow fallen in love with all of the Arab women who have also fallen in love with him, and no one tries to murder him, proving that the whole earlier murder Dino thing was just an excuse to fill pages that was probably added later.
Yep, sound the beret. So yeah, that was issue 16 of Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos. Maybe not the best synopsis, but we did what we could. Let's move right into issue 17. Continuing.
Let's cover what we thought of this one first.
Oh, that's a good idea. I was taking.
We're not
doing
this podcast just to tell people what's in comics they could read for themselves. I mean, it is on Marvel Unlimited.
True. I gave this one 3 stars. I enjoyed it enough. Both of these, a common theme, we'll find they're not the greatest issues, but in my opinion, but they're good enough. They're kind of weaker threes.
Really?
Yeah. But. I feel exactly the same. I also gave this 3, but it wasn't like a super strong 3.
Yeah.
I found that I don't think it's that Sergeant Fury's getting worse. It's just all the superhero stuff is slowly getting better, and it's starting to expose the weakness in Sergeant Fury. Because when we started, about the only thing as good as Sergeant Fury was Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And now most of the superhero stuff is this good. And so, all of a sudden, Sergeant Fury is starting to feel kind of samey and not like a highlight to hit in our reading anymore.
Yeah, and when they're clumped together in these groups of two, it's almost a chore in a way to get to, at this point at least.
I find with Sergeant Fury, it's one I always look at and think, I don't really want to read this. I read it, and I'm like, I enjoyed that fine.
Yeah, I know I'll enjoy it, but they're so wordy and stuff, and so, I mean, they're so wordy, but at the same time, not a lot happens. It's kind of weird that way, but I don't know. It's just sometimes they feel like a bit of a chore when you're, especially if you're coming back to the reading order to them.
Yeah, or right, I think it's worse right now with the podcast too, just because we have to read it. It's not a case where we can sit down and be like, I want to read it today. It's just, it needs to be done so we can get the episode out.
Yeah. That too. But I think we should move on to issue 17, which is titled While the Jungle Sleeps. Of course, written by Stan Lee. We've got Dick Ayers on art again. Vincent Coletta's doing the inks on this one.
I really didn't enjoy the Dick Ayers-Vince Coletta collab on this.
We've got Jack Kirby and Vincent Coletta on the cover. Artie Simic's on letters. February 1965 is when this one was released. 20-page story. And we'll take this one away as well. So we open up with the Howlers riding on camels as they're still in Africa. As they are being chased by Nazis flying in their planes. And somehow the Nazis are so cocky and incompetent that they do not get any of the Howlers killed here. But a lot of it is cockiness because they don't go hard on them at first, but then the Howlers prove to be the threat that we know they are.
Yeah, their plan is literally to fuck with them.
Yeah, but then the Howlers, you know, are the threat we know they are, so it's they're like, oh shit, let's take this seriously, but then it's too late.
This was less inaccurate than a normal infantry plane fight ends up being in comics, just because early World War II planes weren't the most durable and could be shot down by small arms fire.
Yeah. Well, and the added cockiness of the Nazis helps too.
Yeah, it's actually,
it's not that far-fetched, considering.
It's less far-fetched than I've come to expect from the Howlers.
Yeah, so, again, another kind of realistic, semi-realistic moment in the series.
I think that's actually one of the other issues the Howlers are having right now. They haven't been able to settle on a tone. They'll have moments where they're trying to be a fairly grounded war comic, because even the realistic war comics have people shooting down planes with small arms fire, so.
Yeah.
I can't shit on the Howlers specifically for that, but they don't stick to the tune. Like, a little while later, they'll have Baron Zucker coming in with a laser gun he's invented or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, then one of the Nazis ends up getting captured, and then the Howlers are like, hey, what's going on here? Oh, the Howlers get a call. They make it to contact command, and
they used a radio on the plane that gets shot down to contact command and the range for a pickup, And Happy Sam's like, no, you got something else you got to do.
Yeah, so they just send them another mission. They got to find this jungle and take down another Nazi base or whatever.
A bunch of Americans had been captured by the Nazis.
Yeah,
and they had to go rescue them.
That's what it was. It's a rescue mission more than taking, destroying a base, but kind of ends up being both. But they have a Nazi caption, and they're like, hey, take us to your jungle base, fucker. So, he puts up a stink about it and isn't going to, but then the Howlers start to just leave him by himself, and he's like, hey, wait for me! Which is a classic trope. So, we see them taking a nap, and then they're awakened to some to a local African tribe.
And while they were napping, the Nazi escaped.
Yes, the Nazi did run away.
Because the jungle was in walking distance. Please ignore everything you know about actual geography.
Yeah, goes right from a desert to a jungle, as naturally happens all the time. The Howlers fight back against the tribesmen, get the upper hand. They're literally referred to as cannibals at one point, which is pretty cool.
I mean, they're black guys from Africa in the 60s. Of course they're cannibals.
So they keep, after Howlers gain control...
I suspect Stan knows as little about these sort of African tribes as he knew about the more Arabian-themed ones in the last issue. However, yeah. I also know less about them, so I'm less able to catch the numerous inaccuracies in the depiction.
So the Howlers gain the upper hand again. They start wading through some water and further into the jungle. Reb almost fucking dies to quicksand, which is kind of stupid and funny at the same time.
Reb's just fine now, by the way. It's literally only been like a day since he got exploded, but he's fine now.
Yeah. And then the Howlers come up on the Nazi that had run away, and he ends up being injured because a fucking tiger attacked him, yet he has no visible damage of a tiger attack.
Comic code, let's go.
Oh my god. So since the Howlers have been so honorable, the Nazi decides, you know what, I'll be nice and in my death and let them know where the base is. So now the Howlers know where the base is. They make their way there.
But the Nazi doesn't abandon his Nazi ideals. I mentioned that just because I'm going to want to call back to this, because I have stuff I want to say about the interactions with this Nazi.
He does hail Hitler as he's dying with his dying breath after he gives them the location. This is like, it's a Nazi base, but it's definitely just the African tribe's home that they kind of just took over.
Yeah, it's the tribal village. The Nazis have just taken it over.
Which we learn is because they showed this tribe, they follow the person who's the most powerful looking and whatever. So the tribe leader has lost power to the Nazis. And the tribe leader doesn't like it and doesn't want to be under the thumb of the Nazis, but it is what it is. But then they pull this tactic that really pissed me off, but I saw it coming, where they got Gabe to dress as a witch doctor and start to display all this power to try and to start getting the tribe to lean against the Nazis a little bit.
I'm not going to lie. I found this funny.
It's
horribly racist.
Yeah.
But it was also, using the comic logic, it was fucking hilarious.
It works for the time. It does
work. I mean, you could not pull off this scene today. Nor should you be able to.
Yeah.
But, given the time it was printed, I actually thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, it works.
Because they didn't really try to hide that it was Gabe.
Yeah. They didn't hide it to the reader, so...
Yeah, no, this witch doctor just shows up, and they're like, he's doing this, like, dance that looks suspiciously like the jitterbug, and it's like, oh shit, that's Gabe in disguise, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think you actually texted me, like, this better not be Gabe, and then sure enough, it was Gabe.
Yeah, I texted the group chat. I was like, I'm gonna be so fucking pissed if this is gay before that was like the first panel he's
I
in.
knew
I
exactly
said
which panel you were on, because that's where I was giggling, because I'm like, yeah, this is totally
And
gay.
then he immediately did the jitterbug leg a panel later, and I was like, motherfucker. And so the Nazis take Gabe in. They unmask him. They're like, who the fuck are you? But the job's kind of been done. He's sowed seeds of doubt into the tribe. And then the Howlers have found the captured Americans and make a plan to fight against the Nazis and get the tribe on their side and take the fucking Nazis down. So they threaten to slaughter Gabe, I think, to make a point and get the tribe in line. But then Percy comes in with his umbrella, and shit is going down.
That is the thing I hate the most about the Howlers right now.
Percy?
Not Percy per se. Percy's fucking umbrella. Anytime Percy's not using the umbrella, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, they fall back on the umbrella gimmick for him a lot.
He literally Mary Poppins his way over the wall in this one.
He does. I laughed at that because of how stupid it was. So the Howlers just get in full force, and then the tribe ends up joining them too, and the Nazis are taken down. Is pretty much the gist of this.
Yeah,
So,
it's just a fight. They rescue everyone, then they go home.
Yeah, that's pretty
And
much it,
Happy
really.
Sam's like, "How did you enjoy your vacation?" Nick's like, "Fuck off," and then it's over.
Oh, and then Nick also finally sees Pamela again too, and then the Howlers give him a hard time over being lovey-dovey with her or whatever.
Yeah, because he has to be on good behavior with Pam.
Yeah. So that was the second Sergeant Fury issue, which I also gave 3 stars, but a weak 3 stars. But the
This one
average
was
on
a full 3 for me. I
the
actually
av
liked it more than the last one.
Fair enough. I think I felt the same when I was reading them. Apparently, people felt differently than us because this one is
People
a slightly
disagreed
lower
with me
rating.
on this one. The other one was rated higher than this one.
Yeah.
But I think this one actually had some really good points about it. First was the interactions with the Nazi, which is what I wanted the other time when they went to Africa to be, where they had the racist guy in it, and it was like mostly a PSA about how racism's bad. Okay. I think this one handled it much better because the Nazi didn't immediately completely abandon his Nazi ideology when they show him the vaguest bit of kindness.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed more like the way an actual person would handle it. And so I thought that was handled a lot better. They were still able to present the Americans and the non-bigoted viewpoint as the correct one, while not just beating you in the face with a fucking brick about it. And the other thing was, well, the depiction of the African tribe was really, really bad. It was better than I expected from a 60s comic.
Yeah.
They didn't make them speak in broken English. They had like consistent motivations throughout. They weren't just mindless savages that were easily manipulated. Like, they knew the Nazis were playing them, but they couldn't do anything about it. 'Cause they, in the comic, it was presented that they never bought into Gabe.
Yeah. They
Like, they
maybe
knew Gabe was full of shit when he was doing the witch doctor thing. They just went with it because it was an excuse for them to overthrow the Nazis, which they wanted to do anyway.
True.
So it was both really racist and less racist than I thought it was going to be.
That's pretty fair. Pretty fair.
Especially coming off of all those 1950s Korean War comics I've read.
That does help you.
Yes, holy shit, those ones are bad for race relations.
We will not be covering those on any podcast in
No,
the future.
there's nothing to talk about. There's no content to them. Nothing ever actually happens. It's just they fight some sort of Chinese slash North Korean slash whatever super weapon or plot or something. Everyone gets away scot-free, and the status quo is restored, and somehow every single episode the Americans are the most powerful, overwhelming force ever encountered, but yet they don't win the war for 9 fucking years because they want to keep the comic going.
Oh, fuck. What a good time to be a comic reader.
Yeah, so that helped with making this one seem less bad.
Yeah, I can understand how that would work. But yeah, they got 3s, both of these, but they're not the greatest issues of Search Fury, but they weren't terrible either.
You won't hate reading them, but if you don't read them, you've missed nothing.
If you're not already in the Surgeon Fury, you don't need to feel like you gotta search.
There's
either.
No plot advancement at all in these two comics. They went to Africa, they came back, the status quo is restored.
Yeah, that covers it. So, on that note, let's move on to our next comic, which is Fantastic Four number 37, which is titled Behold, a Distant Star. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but together again on this bad boy. Chick Stone is inking here. Jack Kirby doing the cover as well, of course, with a very long read.
That is a long read. This is a terrible cover.
It is a terrible cover, but it's actually a really good story. Don't let the cover fool you here. Artie Simic's own letters. This is a February 1965 release, matching up with our last Surgeon Fury, and Bill will take this one.
All right. Testing out his... And I have the advantage of actually having summaries again.
Fuck you.
You signed the comics, motherfucker, after you knew that there were no Sergeant Fury summaries.
I still took them after I saw
Yeah, you don't
no
get to play for sympathy now. You did that to yourself. Anyway, testing out his new power ray, Reed accidentally causes Johnny to flame on and destroy his tux. After, when he meets with Sue, she is upset that her father's killers roam free. Wow, this is a badly phrased summary. So, they were wearing the tuxes because they were at the wedding rehearsal for John and Sue's wedding. Or Reed and Sue's wedding. That's actually kind of important. And then Sue's heart's not in it because the Skrulls who killed her father are unpunished. Vowing to get them, Reed commissions a special craft with NASA that would allow them to travel through subspace to the Skrull homeworld. Somehow, NASA can build this despite having not even put a man on the moon yet.
Makes sense.
And I only mention that because it becomes a plot point in the future where they actually feature the moon landing when it happens. Traveling there, they fight with Morat, the Skrull warlord who has visions of conquest and wants to marry King Doric's daughter, Enel. He's actually an emperor.
Yeah, small detail.
Small detail, but it'll make the entire... If they actually go into the Skrull civilization now or later, it'll make it important.
Hierarchies don't matter.
Battling the Fantastic Four, he defeats them and takes the entire group captive. He defeats them because their powers don't work on the Skrull world.
It's crazy.
Well, they work, but they're super weak.
Yeah.
When Enel tells her father, the king, that the Fantastic Four are on their world, the enraged monarch finds Morat's actions treasonous and goes to find out what's going on. Meanwhile, thinking that the power booster is a weapon, Morat orders Reed to use it against his friends. Reed does just that, and the restored Fantastic Four battle Morat and his Skrull army until the king arrives. The king orders Morat to desist, prompting Morat to order his men to kill the king. However, when Enel attempts to save her father, Morat jumps into the line of fire. While Enel is saved by the Invisible Girl's force field, Morat is killed. With Morat destroyed, the king tells the Fantastic Four that it was Morat who had visions of conquering Earth and informs them that they no longer need to fear invasion from the Skrulls and allows them to return to Earth. Now that's just a fucking lie. The Fantastic Four arrive home just in time to go through Reed and Sue's practice ceremony. For the record, Morat did come up with the idea to use Dr. Storm as a bomb to kill the Fantastic Four so they could take over Earth. But the Emperor was totally in on it. He was there. He agreed. It was shown in the issue, and somehow Stan and Jack have forgotten that they showed us that.
The Emperor's working.
He is, but I can't shake the feeling that he's working because of writer stupidity rather than actually...
Oh, probably.
You know, trying to do something subtle. Because they don't do any hinting that he's not being honest. Usually they kind of like give you a hint that maybe there's something up in case you didn't read the last issue. But here it's just, oh, it's fine. But as much as I crap on that, I still gave this 3 stars.
I enjoyed this one more than you. I gave it 4 stars. I really enjoyed this issue. I thought it was really good.
This one had some really good points, and it kind of drug in places.
To be fair, I completely forgot about the Morat stuff, so that might have dragged down for me if I remembered that. So they worked me, but...
Yeah. That actually wasn't featured into my rating at all. I found the whole bit with the power amplifier before they went to space really tedious, and then there's like 3 pages of them just fucking around on the spaceship on their way to go to the Skrull homeworld, where like Sue reminds us of everything that happened with the Skrulls killing Dr. Storm that was only like 2 issues ago. And I found all that recap tedious.
Sue goes to a dark place in this issue.
I did enjoy the characterization. Like, it had some really good stuff, but there were just some parts that were hard to read.
No, very true. That's very true.
I'd say actually none of this book was actually a 3-star book. It was just a split between 4-star stuff and 2-star stuff.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that was Fantastic Four number 37. I suppose we'll move on to Amazing Spider-Man 23, which is titled The Goblin and the Gangsters. This one by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. The only difference for people on here is letters by Artie Simic. January 1965 release date, a 20-page story, and Bill will also take this one.
And this has a fantastic Ditko cover.
Yeah.
This is one of the top covers they've done so far.
It really captures the Goblin.
Yeah, and they went more intricate on the shading on Spider-Man. It's not just a plain Spider-Man sitting there.
Yeah.
Anyway, into the actual story. The Green Goblin shows up to a mobster hangout and demands the thugs to bow to his superior skill as he wants to take over Lucky Lobo's mob. The gangsters and the Goblin don't see eye to eye, and the Goblin flees and gets a write-up in the paper about him attacking mobsters. Pete heads over to the Daily Bugle's office, where he sees J. Jonah Jameson meeting with Frederick Foswell, formerly the mobster known as the Big Man. Deciding to give Foswell a second chance, Jameson gives Frederick his old job back. Meanwhile, the Green Goblin is up to no good and gets a list of unreported taxable income about Lucky Lobo's companies from a henchman. The Green Goblin gives the information to Foswell, and he reports on it at Daily Bugle. While swinging around, Spider-Man notices speeding police cars and a raid, and watches the Goblin throw a pumpkin bomb at one of the mobster's getaway cars. The Goblin leads Spider-Man into Lucky Lobo's hangout and leaves the two there to destroy each other. It's not really the two, it's like an entire gang and Spider-Man. Spider-Man temporarily ducks away to call Aunt May as the mobsters follow him in. He traps them as well as Lucky Lobo himself. Lucky explains the Goblin wanted to shove Lucky Lobo aside so he can gain control of the mob and be boss of the underworld. As the Green Goblin and Spider-Man fight, Spider-Man runs out of web fluid and the Goblin runs out of tricks in his bag as he flies away. Yet the Goblin doesn't have luck on his side as he finds out that the police have caught the entire Lucky Lobo gang. And that's the end of the synopsis, but I want to add a bit to why the Goblin's not lucky, because he realizes he wasted all this time trying to take over a gang and just gotten them all arrested, so he's right back where he started.
Yes, which is hilarious. It's a great moment.
This whole issue was fantastic.
It was really good. I gave this one 4 stars.
I did as well. I really enjoyed this one. Anytime Spider-Man's involved with organized crime, it's really good.
Yeah, I love when Spidey's a criminal. No,
which confuses the hell out of me, because anytime any other superhero encounters the Magia or any other organized crime, it's fucking terrible. And so I don't know why Stan can write it good for Spider-Man, but can't write it good for anyone else.
Steve Ditko.
That's probably the difference.
If I was taking a guess, just throwing it out there. No. But yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this one. There were so many great moments. The establishing Foswell as is he or is he not still involved with the gangs, which didn't really come across in the synopsis, but in the issue, it's unclear whether Foswell is working with Lucky Lobo's gang or not.
Yeah, no, there's some mystery in the air about it, which is pretty cool. It's a good story beat.
Yeah, that's excellent. The Jameson scenes are fantastic, as always. JJ is consistently one of the delights of reading Spider-Man. And the phone call. That was one of my favorite things, because when Pete was out fighting the last supervillain, Aunt May got mad that he was back so late and didn't call or anything. So this time he webs everyone into a room and runs out and phones home to be like, I'm going to be late tonight, and then goes back to beating the shit out of gangsters.
Damn, it feels good to beat a gangster. But yes, that was... Any other notes on that one before we move on, I guess?
Not really. This is just Spider-Man being done well.
Just a very solid Spider-Man story, which is what we'd love to see here on the podcast. Give us more of this, please. We're begging. But anyways, let's move on to our depression state of the episode, where we start covering some Tales to Astonish issues. Starting off with issue 6060A story titled The Menace of Madame Macabre. Stanley, you're writing this bad boy, which you can certainly tell. Jack Kirby and Bob Powell on the art, question mark?
Yes, this is a Bob Powell.
Did Jack help at all, though?
Jack probably inked the characters, or penciled the characters.
Maybe that's why maybe this is why it's a little bit better than most Madame Bob
Macabre
Powell.
Madame Macabre looks like a Jack.
Yeah.
Character.
Frank Giacola is on inks here, and Kirby and Powell apparently do the cover as well. It makes me wonder if they're just putting Kirby on this by accident because he's on the Hulk story. That could be
happening. Kirby definitely had some hands in this. Look at Madame Macabre's face. That's a Kirby Asian woman.
If I've ever seen one.
I specify Asian woman because Kirby can only draw one Caucasian woman's face, and that's not it.
Yeah, notice how all the females are just Sue Storm.
Yeah, they really are. I've seen in Fantastic Four when they miscolor Alicia's hair, and you can't tell she's not Sue. The only way you can tell is clothing and context clues.
Yeah. So letters are done by Sherry Gale, who I believe joined us last time.
Yeah, yes, this is our second Sherry Gale appearance.
Second of three. So, I mean, she didn't.
She's
decent.
Fine.
She's fine, but she's probably
at this point, Marvel really doesn't have bad leatherers.
Yeah, no, she's probably just buried. She's probably just not used because buried for a time because she's a female.
That's exactly what it is. She's someone's wife or girlfriend that they needed, and they needed something lettered, so they got her to fill in for a little bit. Yeah, so they got her to fill in for a little bit and never used her again because women aren't any good at this sort of thing.
Yeah. This is a February 1965 release. This is a 12-page story, thank God.
But 12 pages too long, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's true. And I was taking this one. I forget which one was which. Blah, 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 blah. Which of us was doing which one for a second. So, here's the synopsis. This is from the Marvel database. I finally got one this week. So, let's go. While repairing an antenna on the roof of his penthouse lab, Giant Man is informed by the Wasp of a newspaper report. Wow, this whole paragraph has been bad English. But
I think it's written by the person that wrote my Fantastic Four summary.
by the name of, but Wasp of the newspaper reports about a woman by the name of Madame Macabre who claims that she can also make objects shrink and grow at will. Musing how useful Madame Macabre could be, Giant Man manages to spurn the Wasp's jealousy. Meanwhile, at Madame Macabre's lab, her assistant Go-Go has finished building an elaborate toy trap. Yeah?
Wait, that was his name?
Was it? I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but that sounds like exactly the sort of racist Asian manservant name they would give it, so I believe him.
Yeah, apparently it was. For some reason, I thought it was slightly different, but no, it's Go-Go.
I totally believe whoever wrote this summary. I'm just a combination of very shocked and not at all shocked.
But Go-Go has finished building a laboratory tractor for his master to grow in size, revealing that she can only make the items that Go-Go creates grow. She begins to plot how to trick Giant Man into revealing his size change in secret when her other assistant, Kyla, arrives. Macabre begins her plot, which involves a miniature of a room. A short time later, Macabre visits Giant Man's lab, and Giant Man sends the Wasp out of the room, who exits in a fit of jealousy. Macabre explains to Giant Man that as a child, her father was killed when the rickshaw full of personal items fell on him. She was rescued and taught by the Mandarin. This poor Mandarin getting dragged into this. She then displays.
I'm sorry, Mandy. You don't deserve this, even if you are a Liverpool fan.
Yeah. She then displays her powers and asks Giant Man to help her rule the world. Giant Man refuses and asks her to leave, much to the joy of the Wasp. Back at her lair, Madame Macabre plans the next phase of her plot to learn the secret of Giant Man's size change abilities. Later, the Wasp receives an invitation to an art gallery. Busy with a project, Giant Man tells the Wasp to go ahead, and he'll catch up with her after. When the Wasp arrives, she notices that the gallery is empty and puts on her costume. She is quickly knocked out by Kyla and Go-Go and tied up. Arriving a short time later, Giant Man realizes that the place is deserted as well and grows to giant size. Why did I give this 2 stars? This sucks. Anyways, upon doing so, he spots the Wasp in one of the windows and places her in the relative safety of a nearby rooftop before spotting Kayla and Go-Go attempting to steal some of the gallery's artifacts. Shrinking down in size, Giant Man enters the gallery only to be trapped in the room the crooks were in. The room begins shrinking in size and Madame Macabre takes Giant Man captive. This is too long.
Meanwhile, I know why you gave it 2 stars. It's the same reason I gave it 2 stars and we haven't gotten to it yet.
I thought you gave this 1.
I thought so too, but I was wrong.
Oh, you were wrong. Okay. Interesting. Meanwhile, the Wasp awakens and tries to free Giant Man, but she too is captured and placed in the bottle that is set to shrink. However, since the cork that Madame Macabre used to steal the Wasps inside the bottle wasn't specially treated to shrink with the bottle, holy shit. It causes the bottle to break when it gets too small, freeing the Wasp. The Wasp resumes her attack on Madame Macabre until she realizes that Madame Macabre's size-changing device was in the wig she wore on her head. Removing the device and shattering the trap Giant Man was stuck in, the Wasp manages to free her partner. Giant Man grows to giant size and quickly captures their foe. With Madame Macabre defeated, Giant Man and the Wasp return home to muse over Madame Macabre's size-changing device. Whew.
It was a 1-star story that got an extra star because Wasp got to be the hero, which is a rare thing for a woman in the 60s.
That was part of it, and I genuinely did not think Madame Macabre on her own was that bad of a villain. So I kind of gave her a pass, even though she's never seen again. So I'm kind of shocked she's never seen again, considering her abilities. And also, why the fuck did they connect to the Mandarin to just never use her again?
Because they're both Chinese.
That is why.
There's no further reason than they're both Chinese.
It's like, fuck. But yeah, this one managed to get 2 stars out of me. Synopsis made me question myself, but
I freely admit it got a bonus star for vaguely empowering a woman, which in this era does not happen.
That's fair enough.
So I think this is totally a 1-star story, but
yeah,
And that's what I had forgotten when I was telling you I'd given it one. I forgot that I'd bumped it one because Wasp actually got to do stuff.
Fair enough.
Anyways, we still have a giant man to talk about, so let's not linger on this one too long. We'll go right into 67's A story, which is the mystery of the hidden man and his rays of doom. And if you thought the last one was bad, strap in.
Oh yeah, you enjoyed that woman's empowerment in the last one? Hang on to that thought, because it doesn't happen again.
Stan Lee writing this bad boy, Bob Powell by himself in art this month, Chick Stone on inks, we got Chick Stone and Jack Kirby doing the cover. Alrighty, Simics is on letters. March 1965 release date, another 12-page story, and Bill, take us away to our main event.
I feel like this is one of those old WWF pay-per-views where Hulk Hogan was on third, and then they just stuck, like, a random junkyard dog match at the end or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right. This is,
This is not a good story. And you're going to find out how bad it is right now. Chasing after a mysterious vehicle, Giant Man soon finds himself bathed in green rays being fired from it. Little suspecting that it's attempting to steal the knowledge that allows him to change in size and transmit it into a being known as the Hidden Man. Wow, that's good phrasing. Who plots to steal the intelligence of scientists all over the world, Giant Man's resistance to the device causes it to blow a fuse, and the Hidden Man's assistant flees, leaving the vehicle behind for Giant Man to study. I'm not even sure I can clean up that grammar. Basically, the beam is being transmitted to the Hidden Man and infusing him with the knowledge that it steals. Meanwhile, using a second vehicle, Hidden Man sends out his lackey to steal the knowledge of other scientists. The plot soon becomes clear to Giant Man when one of his fellow scientists approaches him as Henry Pym to explain how he forgot all his scientific skill. While showing the Wasp how to tame the Wasp to ride on, she is stung by the It. I had to read that wrong because... She's stung by it, and Giant Man has to shrink down in size to remove the stinger from her body. As he is doing so, he is bathed in the Hidden Man's green ray, and after saving the Wasp's life, realizes that he has forgotten how to make himself shrink in size. However, still knowing how to grow, Giant Man chases after the second vehicle and smashes it.
Golly
Hidden
gee.
Man's lackey reveals his location to Giant Man before being turned over to the police. And I want to stop and focus on how stupid this plot device is. Because Giant Man hasn't forgotten how to shrink. He's just forgotten how to shrink smaller than human size. When he turns into Giant Man, he can still shrink down to normal size.
Yeah, this whole fucking thing was really fucking dumb.
I'm not surprised this comic only lasts another two issues.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. In battle against the Hidden Man, not even the Hidden Man's ability to shrink in size can prevent Giant Man from eventually capturing him. Once captured by the hero, a spaceship appears and takes the Hidden Man away. They explain that he is a criminal on their own planet and use their vast powers to return all of the scientists' abilities. This experience causes Giant Man to black out. And also not receive his own abilities back. I don't think that's made clear in this issue, but I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, in the next two issues, he can't shrink to Ant-Man size anymore because of this.
Oh, for God's sakes. Oh, Jesus.
Woken up by the Wasp, he tells her the dangers past, and she shows him that she finally tamed the Wasp she was training. After treating Giant Man's injured arm, the two heroes return home. And I just remembered why she got stung, and it's so stupid I need to report it. She got zapped with the green ray, and it took away her Wasp training abilities, and that's why she got stung by the fucking Wasp.
Yep, it sure was. For some reason, I thought he got his powers back at the end, his shrinking abilities back at the end of the issue, but
They're not
know.
Clear on that in this one, but I'm pretty sure, and I haven't read the next two since I first read them in, like, 2018. So I might be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure he can't Ant-Man until sometime in Avengers when they finally randomly give it back to him.
Oh, that's... fuck's sakes.
Their attempt to freshen up the title by changing things.
By taking away the ability that was cooler.
Yeah, taking away the better Giant Man power.
I mean, obviously it wouldn't be Giant Man if he can't grow, but he was better as Ant-Man. Stop trying to push Giant Man. Fuck.
Oh, they tried to push Giant Man so hard they eventually push it onto Hawkeye.
Yeah, fucking... Blah.
And it lasts for years.
Stan has fucking problems. Stan needs help. I don't know what's going on here anymore.
I think the thought process was, since Wasp can shrink, having Giant Man shrink too is just duplicating the powers, and this will allow Wasp to be unique.
I mean...
But they never use Wasp, so...
There's something to that if they did it right.
Yes, with better writers, there could have been something there. But these are men in the 60s who couldn't have the woman being the hero repeatedly, so usually it's just Giant Man and Wasp is barely in it, like this one.
Yeah.
Anyway, one star if that wasn't clear.
Yeah, that was a very much a one-star comic. Never to be touched again.
Thank God we're in the past it in the podcast, so I never have to think about it again.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say, but that was genuinely a fucking awful comic.
Yes, it was.
Very, very, very bad. I guess we'll just talk about what we're going to cover next week. Which should be a fun time. So, with that in mind, we are going to start off with Strange Tales number 132, the A story, which will see the Finn and Human Torch face a sinister space trap. We then will go into issue 133, which sees them face, what is this guy called, the Toy Man or something? I don't know. Oh, it's the Puppet Master returning. Okay, cool. Strange Tales number 134, the A story, which sees the Watcher return. And then Johnny Storm and the Thing are kicked out of the title as we get the A story of 135, and we see Nick Fury, the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. debut, which is awesome. And then we will end the episode off with a Tales of Suspense issue, which is issue 65. The A story will see an Iron Man story of him facing somebody else. And the new Iron Man facing the old Iron Man. Interesting. And then the B story for Captain America sees the Red Skull strike. So that should be all right, I would think.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's all right. Just looking over these ratings...
Bad week ahead.
Yes, but the Solo Torch stories aren't as bad as I remembered them.
No, because the previous two we had were the real shit show.
Yeah, it's actually picking up a bit towards cancellation.
The last two seem all right. The first one we have there.
The first one wasn't great, but the next two, as far as Solo Torch stories go,
Puppet Master probably helps a bit. Puppet Master should give a little bit of personality, and then Watcher should be interesting.
I actually liked the Puppet Master story more than most people did.
I love Puppet Master, but he was kind of ruined the last couple appearances we saw him a little bit. But...
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that one, and then the third one is actually like a low-end decent comic.
Yeah.
Because it's got a 2.7 average, and usually about 2.7 to 3.25 is just an average comic.
So yeah, that's next week's lineup. Stay tuned
And the Nick Fury debut is fucking fantastic.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to that big time. It's gonna get me through the week for sure.
It's easily the best thing we're reading this week.
So yeah, that's next week's comics. Stay tuned for that episode. I'm very excited. Nick Fury is almost certainly gonna steal the thumbnail next week in his S.H.I.E.L.D. attire. So... we'll have that coming. We'll probably have another game and live stream coming either before or after that, but stay tuned for that too. Bill and I are making a series for sure out of the TEW Finn.
Yeah, it's actually drawing views. we're gonna have to push that somewhat.
BioShock, I'm not sure if we're gonna return to. We might at some point, but we'll see what happens there. But I mean, the TEW, like Bill said, it is getting actually some views, so we'll definitely be doing that. And we had fun anyway, so we were planning to do more anyway, so it works out. But anyways, stay tuned for whatever comes next, but come back for the podcast next week and come back for some TEW. We know we're doing those for sure. We'll have some Monkey Island at some point whenever we can get all of us together, but that's probably going to be a little harder now, and it was already kind of hard, so we'll see about that. But anyways, we hope you enjoyed. Please leave a like, subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to, if you're on YouTube watching this. We're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, let us know why, for some reason, you're a Madame Macabre Mark. Anyways, we'll see you all next time, and peace out.
I thought your gimmick was sticking the worst villain on there.
Well, I...
But I guess you just figured that there is no such thing as Hidden Man Marks.
Well, Hidden Man, he's so mysterious, I didn't even want to give him the credit, so... But yeah...